This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes, Markets, Madness. My name is John Kutzmita. I'm joined, as always, with Brent Johnson. And we're going to jump right in. Although it was a short week, there was plenty to talk about. Brent, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You feeling all right?
Yeah. I had a little interesting Sunday afternoon. I'm getting old, John. It turns out my body's falling apart. And found out I have a hernia.
Well, that's what, you know, I'm sure Atlas had a hernia as well. That's what happens when you're, you know, you're carrying the world on your shoulders.
Fair enough. I'll be okay. Don't worry about me.
Yeah, well, you're rocking the Bono glasses, so it shows you still got that youthful vibe.
Yeah, that's another aspect of getting old is you can't see anymore.
I feel you. Well, I didn't have any major ailments, but I did have a 90-minute massage yesterday, so I'm on the...
Oh, yeah, wow.
Other spectrum of your pain. Look, man, speaking of pain, it's been more pain, or at least more violence. It's another week of Violently Sideways, which was something we talked about last week and basically titled our episode last week around that theme, and we're still seeing that. Do you want to comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the reality is, you know, the markets had a very good start to the year, but really since, I don't know, let's just call it the end of January, first part of February, markets have really just kind of gone sideways. And we kind of titled it Violent Sideways because we've had some big up days and we've had some big down days. But for the most part, you know, haven't really made ground or lost ground for the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I think that's frustrating for a lot of people. And I'll admit it's even frustrating for me when markets just kind of go sideways and you can't figure out which way it's headed. You know, it's kind of hard to figure out what to do. Sometimes the best thing to do is nothing. Sometimes that's the hardest thing to do is do nothing. But, you know, I think last week we had talked about how, you know, we first started talking about the Violently Sideways. But then at the beginning of the Monday was the market was closed. But then, you know, Loretta Meester came out first thing on Monday morning. She's the head of the Cleveland Fed, and it was some pretty hawkish comments. And the market sold off hard, and Tuesday was one of the worst days of the year for the equity markets. You know, they were down anywhere from 1.5% to 2.5%, 3%. So that caught a lot of people off guard. Yesterday was the Fed minutes. When those came out, they were hawkish. And, you know, I think people were expecting them to be hawkish, especially after Meester's comments. And so because everybody was expecting them to be hawkish and they weren't overly hawkish, the market kind of treated it pretty well. You know, I think it went up a little bit past the minutes. And then today, the market was up in the morning, it was down in the afternoon, and then it closed up a little bit. So, you know, here we are another week later, and we've just kind of gone violently sideways again. You know, and the other markets that have gone kind of violently sideways, if we take it back to the beginning of the year, is both gold and the gold stocks. Gold had a very good January. Gold stocks had a very good January. I think gold was up 5 or 6%. The miners were up 15 to 20%. And the miners have now given up all those gains. Now the miners are actually negative for the year, and I think gold is exactly flat for the year. So, you know, over the last, depending on how you measure it, whether it's the last 3 weeks or the last 7 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks, you know, we've just kind of, we've gone up and we've gone down, but we haven't really made any progress. And so, you know, I continue that my base case is that we are going to see further downside in risk markets. But as you and I have talked about several times, everybody kind of seems to agree with that. And so it's typically doesn't work out the way everybody thinks it's going to, right?
So when we're looking at this current experience of violently sideways, and you got to kind of take a view and take a position, and it's a bunch of fake outs, right? The Bulls and Bears are playing this tug of war, which is also kind of a theme we talked about last week. Now, historically, have we gotten to the point where, you know, this feels like, at least right now, more of a trader's market, right? The professional trader loves the volatility. It's a tough market to invest in. And have we, maybe since the beginning of the 2000s, you know, around the dot-com bust, have we gotten so used to this somewhat steady grind higher where trends are very, very predictable and noticeable that we can't even stomach a little bit of like what markets should, dare I say, used to be? I mean, I'm not trying to create.
No, it's a very fair statement. I mean, and the fact that, you know, central bankers are now, I mean, the fact that I know who the head of the Cleveland Fed is kind of says it all, right? The Cleveland Fed, why do we need to know who the Cleveland Fed is, right? And not only that, and we've talked before about the rise of the one day till expiration options. I think we've talked before about, you know, for the younger culture, the TikTok, the memes, the short stream videos, you know, nothing can hold anybody's attention for more than a couple minutes. Everybody's so used to the quick hit and run at this point. And I think that does translate into the market. So I think your point is very well taken. And I would say that's why I am leaning. The reason, even though I recognize that everybody kind of shares my view, or not everybody, but most people, I think, are ready for some kind of a big, big disaster, for lack of a better word. And the reason why I kind of have stuck with that view, even though I know it's a popular one, is because the best way to make money over long periods of time is just to avoid a big drawdown. And I think this is the type of market where you can experience a big drawdown if you're not careful. And I realize that by avoiding the big drawdown, it's very possible that I miss the big run up higher. And if that happens, I won't miss it entirely, but I realize I may not participate fully in that big run up higher. But my experience tells me that I would rather not participate in the full run up higher in what I see to be a very risky market than to also be exposed to 100% of the downside in a very risky market. So I don't have a very good answer other than to say that, you know, if this keeps going on for another 6 months or a year, I think it would drive a lot of people mad.
Well, we're here for the madness, Brent, so bring it on. You know, it's funny because there's, whether it's talking to professional investment managers, resident investment advisors, people who are managing other people's money, such as yourself, or those who are doing that perhaps more on the professional side, so they have a little bit more flexibility. These are institutional size or fully accredited investors, so they can take maybe more outsized risks. The theme is still the same. In your case, it's like, I'm not going to chase this potential run-up and then experience a big drawdown that takes a lot of energy and potentially luck to recover from. On the more institutional side, it's a very simple theme of just don't blow up. You know, as long as you're in the game, you can usually hit enough base hits that eventually the bases are loaded and you get that home run that you need. Just got to stay in the game. And speaking of staying in the game, and as you mentioned, this, you know, Fed president in Cleveland, it makes me think, I feel like things are so lopsided now that more people know the name of the Fed president in Cleveland than they probably could name, a baseball player or a basketball player on the Cleveland sports team. So it's gotten so wonky that our attention span has shifted so much to the point where these people are walking around like gods. And back to your point about attention spans, it makes me think, I think one of the reasons why, you know, someone like a Peter Schiff is so popular is he's never really strayed away from his narrative. Historically at this point, as wrong as he has been, he's very, very consistent. And I think it allows people to grasp onto an idea when things are just whizzing by them so quickly. And speaking of Schiff, and also this idea of you know, how people want to jump from one theme to the next or have no patience or discourse. You did recently, or not so recently, you had a little debate, but recently it was just published. Do you want to talk about the conversation you had and some of your experience from that?
Yeah, I think we may have touched on it just briefly last week, but it was last Friday, a week ago, where Peter and I were invited on to a platform called Epic Times, where we basically, it wasn't a serious hardcore debate, but basically debating who would win an economic Cold War, China or the United States. Peter was taking China's side and I was taking the United States side. And, you know, what I found the most, it was basically what you would expect. You know, Peter, you know, was arguing for China because he thinks that the U.S. is in a very horrible fiscal situation. We don't make anything. China manufactures everything. And as a result, they're in the driver's seat. And my argument was, well, that may be true, but, you know, we grow all the world's food and we have three oceans and we have more natural resources, a portfolio of natural resources than just about anybody. And, you know, if worse comes to worse and everybody just hunkers down into their own nationalistic resources, we come out pretty well. But the point I made up front, and long story short, I would encourage people to go find it. I found it to be an interesting conversation because Peter, I've said this many times, Peter's probably the best person at explaining what will happen if markets were free and you know, had no government influence. But unfortunately, that's just not the world we live in. But what I, you know, the point I wanted to make up front is nobody wins in an economic war and nobody wins in a Cold War and certainly nobody wins in a kinetic war. And this kind of goes back to my whole milkshake theory. A lot of times people say, well, Brent, you're such an American apologist or you're a jingoistic or you think America is the greatest place in the world and that they can't possibly get hurt. And it's not that at all. You know, if my whole milkshake thesis were to play out, the United States would experience tremendous pain. So it's not that I don't think that the U.S. would get hurt in this situation. I think everybody gets hurt in this situation. I just think the U.S. comes out of it much, much better than many people theorize that they will. And that kind of goes back to this thing. And nobody really wins, quote unquote, in a war, or at least nobody gets through it without getting hurt. Nobody walks into the ring in a boxing ring and doesn't expect to get a few punches, right? Except for maybe Mike Tyson. He usually came out pretty well. But I think, you know, this kind of when this got published today and we sent it out immediately, I know they were commenting before they actually listened to it because like I would tweet it out and it's an hour long interview. And within seconds, people are already responding. This was right or this was wrong or China wins or U.S. wins or and. It kind of goes back a little bit to the tribalism we've talked about. People are so already in a certain tribe and they already have their narrative and they're sticking to it. And not only that, it's the quick hit, right? You know, the attention span. You know, most people probably don't have the time or the energy or the attention span to listen to an hour interview, but they're more than happy to see a tweet and immediately respond to it, right? And in fairness, I'm probably guilty of the same stuff from time to time. I'll see a tweet and I'll respond to it very quickly. But I think that all of this stuff that we're talking about, it has translated into markets. So to your point, I think people just in general now, probably to their detriment, are ready for the quick hit and move on as opposed to just sitting back, looking at the big picture and waiting for their pitch to come to them.
Yeah, I think it's a great comment to make there. And I know it's coming, but I don't know if the lessons were really learned. And what I mean by I know what's coming is in the context of what you're mentioning, my mind just goes right to crypto. And that was such an embodiment of 2020 and 2021. And you basically have had a complete wipeout now of that space. I get what Bitcoin is doing, Ethereum. They've kind of found footing for now, but so has all risk assets. But to me, it's more about the unwillingness to discuss the idea. Like we're all in agreement, you and I, at least in that narrative, in that conversation about the issues with the Fed and monetary policy and the abuse of that power. But again, it's like people just they want a solution. They want it now. Once they find one that it's like a religion, once they feel like they found their God, they don't want to. That bias sticks so hard and they don't want to be proven otherwise. So you had this debate with Schiff, and let's be honest, at this point you have such a rapport with the guy, it's almost impossible to truly debate him. It'd be like if you and I had a debate, we'd be like throwing jabs at each other. jabs, meaning like, you know, little cheap comments here and there. So
there may have been a few of those.
Yeah, maybe a few. Sure, I'm sure there were, which makes it good because it's not this like stuffy aggro debate. It's there's a bit of jest there. So within that, Peter's making a case for China. And one thing I want to ask about that is, does he have a response in regards to the two? One of the things you mentioned, but one of the certain aspects of that, if we get very nationalistic and everybody just kind of hoards in around their borders, China has no food, they have no resources, they import everything. But in addition to that, they've got real demographic issues. Has Peter really addressed that in any of these things he's ever done as far as like how China's going to handle the demographic problem?
You know, I haven't heard him talk about that specifically, and I don't remember that coming up last week. What we did talk about to a certain extent was, and my point was, an economic, I cannot foresee a situation where a full-out economic war with China does not ultimately become a kinetic war with China. Now, God, hope I'm wrong, right? I hope I'm wrong, because it looks like we're headed towards an economic war. And the last thing I want is a real war. But to go to a full-scale economic war, for me, is really hard to see how we get out of that without it becoming military as well. And at one point in the conversation we were talking about, he was saying, well, and I was saying, well, if we're no longer exporting food to China, where are they going to get it? And his comment was, well, they'll get it from Brazil, or they'll get it from, you know, somewhere else. And my point to him was, okay, in today's day and environment, it's no problem for China to buy soybeans or corn or whatever it is from Brazil. But in a situation where we're at war with China, the ships are not going to freely sail from Brazil to China and supply the United States enemy with much needed food if we don't want them to. Now, that doesn't mean that Brazil and China couldn't partner up. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't try. My point is only that the U.S. would not just sit by and let it freely happen. Now, you may say that our Navy is not as strong as it used to be and that we're not going to bomb the ship sailing from Brazil to China. And I just happen to disagree with you. You know, I think in an all-out war, all options are on the table. And unfortunately, I think those types of things would happen. And so, and that's why I mean, you know, people don't like it when I say that the dollar will still remain strong and the United States will remain strong because of our military. It's not because I want these things to happen. It's not because I think they should happen. It's not because I think it's the moral thing to do. It's just, I think it's reality, right? And I think that's kind of the, you know, a lot of people, you know, kind of going back to these little quick hit, you know, no attention span videos, I think one of the reasons they're popular is that it gives you a little quick escape, right? You don't have to deal with reality. You just go online and you watch a little funny video and you escape from your whatever you're doing. And I don't think people are really ready for the reality of what, you know, hard times would mean. And when I say that, I mean the United States as well. I mean, a lot of our people are not ready for hard times. But I also don't think that the rest of the world is so ready for hard times either. You know, the rest of the world has probably had it worse than the United States. I mean, as the hegemon, the United States probably has one of the highest standards of living in the world. Maybe not the highest, but one of the highest. But it's not like the rest of the world, you know, is looking forward to dark days either. You know, it's all relative. And, you know, if the Chinese populace, who's been led to believe that it's their manifest destiny to eventually run the world, all of a sudden start going hungry and unemployed, and the houses that they bought start defaulting and you know are no longer have any value, I don't know if they're going to continue to, you know, look at Xi with such reverence as they currently do. And so, again, all of this stuff is relevant. I'm not saying that this stuff can't happen to the United States, but it's not going to happen to the United States in a vacuum.
Yep. And you've made that point consistently throughout, that all of this is, you know, the idea of the milkshake theory is a great way of explaining a very basic core concept of what that means. But all of these knock-on effects have to be taken into context. There's everything is a relative game here. And so, yeah, it makes me, you know, think a little bit about what China was able to achieve on one hand with the lockdowns for as long as they did. But it also then makes me kind of think about all the chaos that was unfolding during the 2020-21 years here with Black Lives Matter protest. And so I feel like China does a really good job of keeping things you know, keeping that beach ball held underwater. But eventually you get to the point where it's a real issue, not just, you know, the lockdowns are an issue, but, you know, people's entire livelihoods are wiped out and they can't get food. And I agree. I think there's an unpredictability there that surrounds us as human beings that doesn't fit well into the Chinese model, which is all about control and predictability. Right. And so at least in the United States, whatever your view on it, we're used to navigating chaos. I feel like it's just outside of the realm of how that country functions, but I'm by no means an expert at all. But speaking of China, there was an interesting headline that fits, kind of falls right into your lap as one of those fun conversations to have regarding Iraq and their adoption of the yuan. Do you want to share a little bit on that?
Yeah. I, and I'm going to use this story to try to make a little more of a point. I'm not going to get on my soapbox too long, but I am going to use this to make a point. So there was a headline that came out yesterday that basically said the Iraqi Central Bank announced that now they were going to be doing trade with China in yuan. And of course, many of the dollar bears and the China ascending to the top and the yuan taking over as a competitor currency seized on this to say, see, now, you know, China is importing oil from Iraq and they're paying for it in yuan. And this will relieve the pressure of, you know, the dollar shortage. And this is another step towards ending the petrodollar. Well, it turns out that if you actually read the article, and then not only just read the article, if you actually asked a few people who know what they're talking about and do a little research on it, you find out that the headline is actually the exact opposite of that. So oil is not included in this. Oil is excluded from this Chinese-Iraqi yuan trade. So the oil trade still takes place in dollars. It's not even that China is going to pay yuan for other Iraqi exports, because Iraq doesn't export really much of anything other than oil to China, which is still being done in dollars. What it relates to is the fact that Iraq has a severe dollar shortage, and it's hurt their severe dollar shortage is hurting the exchange rate with the Iraqi dinar. And so what it relates to is now Iraq is going to pay for imports from China in yuan. And the reason they want to use yuan is they don't want to use dollars, because they need the dollars for other stuff. And so it's actually the exact opposite of what everybody jumped on the headline about. Not only that, but, you know, this started going around Twitter a little bit. And, you know, I pointed out that this oil was excluded from this, and then somebody else pointed out, well, yeah, but since 2009, it isn't done in dollars, because since 2019, the oil trade between Iraq and China is done based on a barter deal, where China was going to provide construction to Iraq, and in exchange, Iraq would provide oil to China. And so they were saying, no, you know, there is no dollar oil trade between Iraq and China. Well, this isn't true either. You know, back in 2019, they did announce this. They did announce this barter deal. But at the time, it was only going to be for 100,000 barrels a day. And there's about $1 million of barrels a day that Iraq ships to China. So it was only 10% of the total. It was never a huge percent of the overall total. Well, then you come to find out that the reality is even though this deal was like put on paper, it was never actually implemented. So over the last 3 or 4 years, all the trade between oil, between Iraq and China, even up to today, it's done in dollars. So this is not a huge de-dollarization win for China, who is now buying oil from Iraq in yuan. And I'm not sitting here and saying that this could never happen. And when I first saw the headline, I thought that that's probably what it meant too. But the difference is I actually did a little research on it, and you figure out that it's not. And so this is not me saying that I'm smarter than anybody else. This is me trying to encourage people that when you first see a headline, don't just automatically assume that it's 100% correct, because it's usually not. And the other thing is that part of the reason that I probably hit back so hard on my whole dollar thesis is exactly the reason that we saw yesterday, when people see a headline and they automatically 100% assume that it means that the dollar is done for. And I'm really trying to counteract this a little bit, because I think a lot of times, to your point earlier, you get the quick hit, you get the narrative, you hear it, and you accept it as 100% true, and you move on, right? And I would just encourage people not to accept everything at face value. Don't take the quick hit and move on. Like, take the time to actually really read through it and understand what's happening. At some point, the dollar is probably going to lose its global reserves currency status. History tells us this is what has happened. The reason I'm out here saying don't get so excited about it is because it is incredibly hard to do this. It is incredibly hard to unsee the hegemon. It's not impossible. History tells us it happens, but it is really, really, really difficult.
Yeah. Hold your horses should be like the subtitle under the milkshake theory. Just chill out for a minute. So Google has a thing that's called ad blindness, where if you do like a heat map that shows clicks, we've gotten so accustomed to the fact that you search for something and the first three or four results are ads that you start to block them out, and then the entire side panels are ads. You completely ignore it, and you look at this kind of like click pattern, and everything just kind of skips over that. Well, for a long time, we knew what clickbait was. We knew that these headlines were written in a way just to get us hooked in, just to create this stir, and not so much stir like you're triggering me with this idea. You're triggering somebody or creating this polarized conversation purely based on headline, because people have lost, they now have clickbait blindness, right? They're no longer paying attention to the fact that clearly this headline is just meant to bait me, and they take the bait, and you get into these like very futile conversations because no one's really stepping into that debate with a grounded sense of what the information is. They haven't read the article. They hadn't watched your video debate. It's just an immediate reaction based on what they hold to be completely fact and undisputable because of a narrative they fell in love with previously. And it's interesting to kind of see some of that unfold constantly around the same theme. And one of the things that I think it's worth highlighting, because we do talk about it, you talk about it often, but sometimes you're coming in to this conversation, the dollar milkshake conversation, or anything that's relative to, you know, the topic of the day for our financial system, and you miss some of these nuances, like, okay, there's this conversation around potentially changing what currency we're using for trade, but the reason they're doing that is because the dollars are still so sacred. And you see that in these articles about governments selling their treasuries. See, I told you, Brent, they're de-dollarizing, they're getting rid of this. And it's like, no, they're just defending their currency because everybody wants dollars and nobody wants their currency. And the only way to do that is to sell the bonds. Yeah. So a lot of people don't necessarily take a step back to look at that. And they have this, you know, narrative blindness, and it becomes this futile debate without realizing that things are relative. And one more point I'll add to that, based on the things that you're highlighting here, is the timeline. Like, the time horizon is so critical here. You're not going to wake up tomorrow because Iraq is scared to sell their dollars and has some hokey deal with China, which normally you wouldn't even hear about, except there's an entire polarized part of the world that wants the dollar hegemony to end. So as soon as they get something like this, they post clickbait. So when you're seeing something like this, you're not actually taking a moment to step back and think about it and put it into context as to what's going on in the bigger picture, and realize that even if this is true, even if your version of this story is 100% accurate, it doesn't mean the U.S. is going to lose a reserve currency status tomorrow.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, there you have it. Look, it was a good episode. I think we got, you know, more into the milkshakes. Not as much madness, although there's plenty that I could throw on the table right now, but I won't, because I think the theme here is attention span. And one of the reasons why I think we're doing well with keeping people's attention spans is keeping it short. Brent, before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to highlight? Anything coming up next week? Anything in the personal life that's worth sharing with the milkshake world?
No, I think a couple days ago was Fat Tuesday, so we're now into Lent. So anybody that's like giving up meat or, you know, taking on any kind of, you know, hardships over the next few weeks as we run into Easter, I wish you luck and prosperity, and we'll just have to see how it goes week by week here.
Yeah, maybe people should give up the internet for a week and see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you for popping on here. Good conversation as well. And we'll see everybody next week. Find us online at milkshakespod.com. We're on Twitter, YouTube, under the same type of handle, milkshakespod. Brent Johnson can be found on Twitter at Santiago AU Fund. And you can find me at John Kutzmita. So we appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Brent.
Awesome, John. See you next week.